Welcome to another week of the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday, while co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. You know, since I was involuntarily transferred from the rarefied air of academia into the foul-smelling swamp of politics, I've been wondering just what it's going to take to save this country. We need somebody who can take down the corrupt two-party system, who can end the war that will not end in our lifetimes, and who can save our freedoms and our Constitution, and end the empire, restore the republic, and somehow do all that without suffering the fate of John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and those other great Americans who've been martyred to truth and justice. You know, since I left academia for politics, I've been privileged to meet some of the greatest people that you could ever want to meet. But of all the amazing people I've had the chance to talk to, none is more amazing than today's guest, Governor Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura is the only man in modern history to beat the two-party system in a big way when he won the governorship of Minnesota in 1998 as a Reform Party candidate against a heavily favored and heavily funded Republican Norm Coleman and Democrat Hubert Humphrey III. Jesse Ventura has been a professional wrestler, an actor. He was the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. He's been a talk radio host, a TV personality, and, of course, a governor. And today he's a radio guest, and he has been kind enough to endorse my candidacy for Congress, which has a primary coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, Wisconsin's 3rd District, on the web at BarrettForCongress.com. And Jesse Ventura, in his barn-burning speech at Ron Paul's Rally for the Republic just last week up in St. Paul, Minnesota, said that, hey, if we're still here for him and we're going strong, he might just be willing to take on the two-party system one more time and run for president in 2012. Well, he has my pre-endorsement. Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, or the next president, I should say, Governor Jesse Ventura. How are you doing, Jesse?
Hi, Kevin. I'm doing good, but I think you're far too premature with that.
Well, hope springs eternal.
We haven't managed to get through this election yet in 2008 and see what's going to happen in this one.
Well, we're not even completely sure they're even going to have an election. You never know with these crazies.
Well, that could be true, too. I don't know. But it's proving very interesting, you know, and as I said, I watch the two parties. I'm not a fiend. I feel good about the fact that I didn't watch either convention at all. See, I'm an equal opportunity disliker of both of them, so I felt it was only fair when I didn't watch anything that came out of Denver that likewise I should watch nothing that came out of St. Paul. But having said that, I will say this. I did go over to the Republican convention. I had to do a couple interviews over there at the crack of dawn. I think it was Thursday morning, if I recollect right, last Thursday. And I found it very interesting in comparing. When I went to the day before, when I went to the Ron Paul rally, Dr. Paul's rally in Minneapolis at the Target Center, there was virtually no additional security that I could tell other than Asia, who is always hired by the Target Center. I mean, if you go there for basketball games, Asia security is there. So it seemed really nothing unusual at the Ron Paul rally at the Target Center in Minneapolis. I pulled right up to the building. I was let in. They opened the thing. The car that brought me right underneath. I was then given my credentials at that point and could literally go anywhere I wanted. And I really felt that there was no real presence of some, massive security operation going on.
Well, maybe they think you're tough enough. You don't need security?
Well, no, but the point I'm getting to is that then the next day when I went over to St. Paul, which is, of course, our bordering city, the only difference is the river. You cross over the river, you go to St. Paul. Well, that morning when I went to go, I couldn't even get off at the downtown exit that normally I do from my home when I go to downtown St. Paul. I had to travel all the way through the city to the south end, get off there, then double back on the side streets, and they brought you up to a place where you got out of the car because no automobiles were let any closer.
Yeah, well, somebody
this was probably three blocks. You had to then walk before you came up to your first place where you had to show your credentials. Then when you got through there, and I noticed that there were these metal temporary walls that completely encircled the entire Target Center area beyond the targets, beyond the Excel Center, out into the street area, you know, the streets. Then you passed through that, through another set. You got to a third wall, I believe, and it was at that point you had to go through metal detectors. And then when you got inside, every 75 yards, there were SWAT teams everywhere. I mean, I could only deduce from this that it had to be like the green zone in Baghdad.
Well, yeah, maybe they're expecting the people here to react the way they were. They sometimes react over there.
Well, the point I'm trying to make here is, why the two differences? Why do the Paul people and myself and all of us who are active in politics, why could we go to a building that had virtually minimum security, and yet the Republicans, and I heard Denver was the same way, the Democrats, they literally have to build San Quentin Prison in which to go in there and have their, is that what the U.S. has gotten to today now?
Well, these major
parties, it was probably just very bizarre to watch a situation that, and I remember when I was at the Paul thing and the U.S. Olympic swimmer spoke, and the main thing I got from him wasn't the fact that he had won a gold medal at the Olympics this year in China or any of that. The main thing out of his speech that really I took home from it was when he stated through all his travels throughout the U.S. and the world now, he said now he views the United States that we are just one attack away from martial law.
Well, that's right. That's why I said that we're not even 100% sure we'll even have an election.
Well, that I don't know, but I'm starting to believe that now. I thought his words were very penetrating to me, and then having gone over to this Republican convention and looked at the entire setup, and I mean, it reminded me of being politically inclined, I guess, in East Germany.
Well, they say that the people shouldn't fear the government. The government should fear the people, and it looks like this government is starting to fear the people.
I don't know about that, but all I know is that, like I said, it didn't paint to me a very good picture of freedom in the United States and what we're supposed to stand for. And I understand there has to be security and all that, but are our politicians truly that hated?
Well,
that they need that type of security in which to move around?
It seems to be getting that way.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why when somebody like you comes along,
comparison.
You know, you come along and take on the two parties.
Comparison of the 2 days.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a really telling comparison. Likewise, you know, when I've lectured on 9/11 and gotten a lot of, you know, hate mail and press like that, I never have any security, and I've never really had a problem. And these.
Well, let me ask this. When you lecture on 9/11 and you get hate mail, what is the purpose of the hate mail? What is the hatred that you don't? That quite possibly you don't believe the explanation you were given?
Yeah, I guess I'm asking the wrong questions. They don't want people to ask those questions.
Because that's different. Because again, I don't understand that. We're supposed to be in a free country where you can ask any question you want to ask.
Well, that's what I thought, and you know, then I end up losing my job. But I'm working on getting another job by kicking out those politicians who came after me. And I am in the election tomorrow. We'll be back with Governor Jesse Ventura, talking today with Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota and the only American in modern history to beat the two-party system in a big way. And there are folks who are holding out hope for his future candidacy for president, and I hate to admit it, but I'm one of them. You know, Jesse, we're talking about getting attacked, and I get a lot of email telling me I'm crazy, and I always respond that anybody crazy enough to email a crazy man to tell him he's crazy is even crazier.
I don't know about that, but let me go back. You got fired from your job because you questioned 9/11?
That's right. Yeah, they needed a Paul guy, and they chose me.
What were you doing that fired? What were you doing that, and who, and how, and why, and what? They actually told you that was the reason.
Well, pretty much, Jesse. You know what happened there was this was after Scholars for 9/11 Truth had really started going in a big way. We had 100 professors or so on board with it, and so then I got an invitation from this sleazy talk radio hostess over in Milwaukee, and she, you know, sweet talked me and said, "Oh, I'd love to hear your views. You know, I hear that you're, you know, you're. Can I see your syllabus and come on the radio tonight with me?" And so, sure, I said, and center my syllabus, and in that syllabus for a 16-week Islam class, there was 1 week devoted to analyzing the war on terror from various perspectives, including the perspective of 80% of the world's Muslims, which is that it was an inside job. So I sent that to her. I got on a radio show, and she just attacked me, vilified me, called me Wisconsin's Ward Churchill, an evil man who should never be allowed to teach our poor innocent children. And then the very next morning, this state representative, Steve Nass, put out a press release calling for me to be fired from my job at the university because of this. And it went on. There was a big media circus. I didn't get fired that semester, but I was turned down for a tenure-track job I applied for, and one of the guys on the committee, the then dean of humanities, said he was part of that process. The only reason I was turned down is because of my politics. And then this the other university, Wisconsin, where I've been teaching on and off for more than 10 years, has not rehired me since that semester, even though last time I was up against somebody with vastly less experience and qualifications. So I suspect I've been pretty much blackballed from academia.
Really? And that's what our academia is today?
Well, it's sure looks that way to me.
I always thought academia was the place where you could go discuss diverse opinions.
That's what I used to think, too. I was actually...
But it's not that way. Now, you know, talking to me, see, I didn't go to college. I went in the Navy right out of high school. And then when I did get out, I went to, you know, a semester of junior college, basically, before I went off on my wrestling career until I taught at Harvard in 2004, which was my first real trip, I guess you'd call it, into academia. And I really enjoyed it out there at Harvard. And I actually did a class on the assassination of John Kennedy, where I brought Jim Fetzer out.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Shouldn't I have been, here I am a part of the John F. Kennedy School of Government, and I'm actually reaching the subject of the assassination of the man that the school is named after, and they allowed me to go forward with that, even though it may have caused them some discomfort because the basis of our class was not believing the Warren Commission.
Well, I don't know how you did that. I don't get any respect from Hannity either, but I noticed that you got respect even from Hannity. He was cowering in the corner.
Well, I got it because I went there in person. See, I handle Fox a different way. I will not do Fox, any of their nighttime people, unless I'm physically there with them. I won't do them over a TV screen or talk to them over, or, you know, where I'm not in the room with them, because I find that... You'll find this out about most chicken hawks, and you know what a chicken hawk is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
A chicken hawk's somebody who, when it was their time to go to war in the military, they were chicken. But when they're 50 years old or safe and sound, then they become hawks.
Like listen.
Well, that's what all the personnel is at Fox News, the nighttime, from Hannity to O'Reilly and all them characters. None of them have ever served in the military, nor would they. And so, but they're hawks. And I found the best way to deal with chicken hawks is you got to face them down face to face. And when you do that, they're not nearly as brave as they are when they are in their, you know, then they hit more of their chicken mode.
Well,
as opposed to their hawk mode.
You know, Bill O'Reilly actually said that I should be taken out in a mob hit and be found floating in Boston Harbor. And so then I challenged
him. Wait a minute, over what?
Over supposedly teaching 9/11 conspiracy theories in the college classroom.
What's the matter with that?
Well, that's a good question, you know. And so I challenged O'Reilly to a debate on the edge of Boston Harbor, and whoever lost would get pushed in, but
yeah.
He never got back to me.
Yeah, of course not. Well, you know, I just don't understand. People can have a different opinion of you than your opinion. They can certainly have different opinions than my opinions, but why do they equate violence with it, and why would they equate that somehow, when you live in a country where Thomas Jefferson, one of his most famous quotes was, dissension is the greatest form of patriotism, why in a country that was formed and created with the help of a person like Thomas Jefferson would we get to today where if you even differ with the government, you risk losing your job, you get hate mail, and you get your reputation and life trashed simply because you have a different opinion than what the government has put out. And you know, it would be one thing, Kevin, if the government hadn't been caught lying so often. But see, to me, the government has no credibility anymore. They lied to me about the Vietnam War, the whole Gulf of Tonkin incident. They've now admitted didn't happen. And so the basis, what got us full-fledged into the Vietnam War, was false pretenses. They lied about weapons of mass destruction and following this intel of this guy Curveball or whatever, who was the laughingstock of Europe. The Europe intelligence community looked at him like a total, you know, had no credibility, and they couldn't figure out why the United States gave this guy such credibility. And yet when you listen to Hannity and you listen to O'Reilly, they rewrite history then. They state that, oh, all of Europe was in agreement with us, that they all agreed that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah,
no, that wasn't true.
That's right.
That wasn't true at all. We took the intelligence from a guy who literally had no credibility in Europe.
Well, the facts were being fixed around the policy.
Exactly. And so, I don't know, it causes me great worry in this country today of ours when we're following actually the teachings of Hermann Göring, a Nazi, which disturbs me a great deal. Hermann Göring said that, here's a quote from him. He said, excuse me. He said, it's easy to take a country to war. All you have to do is convince them they're under attack, denounce the pacifists for being unpatriotic, and denounce them for supposedly putting the country into danger. And that's exactly what we've had impressed upon us since 2001, 9/11.
Well, that's right. He said it works the same in every country, and it seems like it worked here. Jesse, can you stick around for one more segment at least?
Yes, I can.
All right. We'll be back. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking with Governor Jesse Ventura, the man who beat the two-party system. And, you know, Jesse, you just revealed the secret of how to get respect from Chicken Hawk Hannity, just be in the same room with him.
I need to make a correction, though. I am not the only one who has defeated the system. Governor Angus King of Maine actually served two terms as an independent up in Maine.
Okay.
So his second term was my first term. I got all the publicity, but Governor King had already served 4 years by the time I got there, and he did 8 years, and then it was unique because when Governor King was leaving office after doing 2 4-year terms in Maine, the press up there immediately came to him and they said, well, what's it going to be now, Governor, Congress, the Senate, what's next? And Angus turned to the press and said, nothing, I'm going home. He said, I've neglected my personal life for 8 years. I have a lot of things I have to catch up on. I'm going home. And the media couldn't understand that at all, that someone could actually have the mindset of what our forefathers had in mind when they created our great country, that you would go and serve. And when you were done serving a reasonable amount of time, not your entire career, you would then go back home and do what you did before.
It's the citizen statement model.
You know, imagine that. But no, please give Governor Angus King kudos because, and amazingly enough, guess what two states always lead the nation in voter turnout? Minnesota and Maine. And those are the two states where you saw independent governors elected.
Now, did he have the same kind of problems with the media that you had? You know, you were able to rake up the highest popularity ratings in Minnesota history.
Angus was extremely popular in Maine. I mean, he served 4 years and then turned around and got reelected and served a second 4-year term. Yeah, you know, and Angus enjoyed great popularity up in Maine because I think Maine and Minnesota, the people there are alike in more ways than the two states just simply are up north and start with M.
Well, you know, I heard that Kenny Bunkport City Council was considering a resolution to arrest Bush next time he came to town. So,
well,
you
find some very patriotic people who believe in the Constitution in both of those states very strongly, and I think that's one of the reasons that Governor King and myself were able to be successful and get elected.
And, you know, trying to keep that level of popularity with the people in the face of media criticism is something that really, it takes something special, and especially now with the 9/11 issue, that's even tougher.
I love to tell the story, Kevin, of this. You know, when I took office, I wrote my autobiography, and the Minnesota media accused me of profiteering. Big stories and editorials that I won the office, and now look at, I'm just profiteering from it. I've written a book. and they just trashed me. 3 months later, Senator McCain comes through on a book tour, and they herald him.
Right,
what a great work. The senator's here on a book tour, and yet just 3 months previous, they had called me a profiteer for doing the same thing that they do. You write a book.
Well, the same thing in the 9/11 truth movement. You know, they've attacked us for supposedly trying to profiteer on this great tragedy. But, you know, Jesse, I've gone totally flat broke. I had student loans up to the sky. And I, you know, it's just working for 9/11.
I would like to know anyone that questions 9/11, how are they profiting?
Well, that's right. You know, I did write a book, but it hasn't really made me any money. On the other hand, Rudy Giuliani made what? How many tens of millions was it on his various book deals and speaking gigs?
Sure. See, there's another double standard. You're not allowed to write a book questioning 9/11, which we're supposed to be in a free country. I can read your book and I can make a determination, you know, do I want to believe what he's talking about or don't I? I get a kick out of how we've got these mind police out there, these mental police running around in our country who feel that none of us are capable of reading something and determining whether we want to believe it or not. But we certainly have the mind capable of hearing one, two, possibly three sides to every story, and then you can make a logical decision. What do I believe? What don't I believe? You know, do you know what got me? I didn't question 9/11 one bit until Bush announced we were going to invade Iraq. And all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute. Iraq, according to what the government told me, these 19 hijackers, not one of them was from Iraq. Why would we now go attack Iraq?
Well, I was asking myself that, too.
That's really when I started to question my government again. Up until that, I took 9/11 as being true, completely. And then it was when they announced we were going to go in and invade Iraq, a country that they even admitted with their description of 9/11 had nothing whatsoever to do with it.
Well, we now know that Bush ordered the CIA to forge and backdate a document tying Saddam Hussein to Al-Qaeda and to WMDs. So they were trying to make that connection. Apparently the CIA didn't come through on that, though.
Well, I don't know anything about that. I just know that the fact is, according to the government's own story, Iraq had nothing to do with it. So why all of a sudden are we going to now attack, defeat, occupy a foreign country? And that's what angered me the most, was that I never believed my country would do that. I watched the communists do that. I heard about, through my parents, how the Nazis did it, and through reading about it in history, because I wasn't alive yet. I wasn't born till 51. And now my country was going to invade another country without being asked, overthrow its government, and occupy that country. That's what the Nazis did. That's what the communists did. Now we've done it. And that's when I really started to question my country again. I say again because I also questioned it during the era of Vietnam, and I thought that all this stuff left when Nixon left. But it certainly hasn't. We're now being wiretapped again. We watched the Democrats totally give away the Fourth Amendment, you know, that protects you from illegal search and seizure.
Right, that lies in the bill. Obama even signed that, or he voted for it, rather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and how on earth can people expect change when you got two entities that essentially think the same thing in the same way?
And they're funded by the same people.
Yep. Hell yeah, precisely. Funded by the same people. So the people that give them their orders have bought them both off. So that's what you're faced with.
And that's becoming more and more clear in the case of Obama, who some people were holding out hope for. His recent behavior has just showed that he's going to obey those same corporate masters, the McCainers.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's, as I've said, he's just another Democrat.
Right.
I will be amazed to see if anything changes other than my taxes go up.
Right.
You know, to pay for all the stuff they're promising again, rather than, and you notice neither of them will bring up the deficit. How can you have a vibrant economy when you owe $9 trillion? First of all, I don't even know how much $9 trillion is. But I did figure out, I put $300 million into $9 trillion. because that's supposedly we're at a population now of around 300 million. Well, that means that a baby born today is $30,000 in the hole when it takes its first breath.
Wow.
Now, if CEOs and people in charge of finance in the private sector, if they behave that way, they'd be put in jail. Case in point, Enron and WorldCom. These people were in prison for misappropriating and misusing the funds. Yet we have elected officials that we call honorable, and we build pedestals to them and put their portraits up and name roads after them and all that type of thing, when if they behave that way in the private sector, they'd be put in jail.
Well, you know, Jesse, all that debt is earning fantastic profits for the private bankers who are hauling in interest on it.
Well, I'm sure they are, and I hear your music coming, so at that point, I'll bid you farewell.
Okay, well, hey, thank you, Jesse. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Kevin, keep your chin up and keep the fight up, because don't let them put you down.
Okay.
America is supposed to be the place of freedom.
All right, well, thank you. You too, hang in there.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Kevin Barrett. We'll be bringing on a couple more guests, including Sophia Smallstorm, the director of 9/11 Mysteries, and we'll also be bringing on Peter Thottam, who recently had charges dropped against him stemming from his intervention in a talk by Nancy Pelosi. So that's coming up. We do have a couple of callers. I'm sorry I wasn't able to shoehorn them in with Jesse Ventura. He doesn't give me all that many breaks to shoehorn things in, but man, what a guy. All right, let's debrief. Who's first? Martha from Wisconsin. Come on in, Martha.
Yes, hello. Greetings from beautiful Dunn County. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well down here in beautiful Lone Rock.
Very good. Well, say, I wanted to just thank you for getting Jesse on. And boy, this is the greatest political thing for you, Dr. Barrett, is to have Jesse Ventura in your corner. He is so hot right now. He's all over YouTube. His audiences are young. They're dynamic, like your duo. They think, you know, they don't just blindly follow. And
we may be dynamic, but we're not getting any younger here.
Yeah, well, that's okay. There's room for everybody. But my question to you is, we're doing a little party tomorrow night after the primary. We're hoping that luck is with you. For some reason, should you not win the Libertarian primary, what are your plans for the future?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I suppose I could always consider just running as an independent and say, to heck with the Libertarian.
Would you do that?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I think, you know, like Jesse Ventura, you know, he says he's a small L libertarian.
Yes, right.
He believes in freedom, and he wants to keep the government down in general to a relatively small size and, you know, keep it non-intrusive. But he's not on board with these extremist sort of party line things like, you know, shut down the public schools overnight, you know, no health care, no
hence his following, sure. Right.
He says those are anarchists. And I pretty much agree with him. So, you know, if it turns out that I'm not suited for the Libertarian Party, I would consider trying to be an independent, I guess. But I'd also have to consult my wife on that, who actually probably will be voting against me, since she'd rather I retire to home life.
Well, I've been plastering your posters all over Dunn County, and I wish you the best.
Well, hey, thanks, Martha. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and keep that going, boy. Any connection you can keep with Jesse, I mean, that's a gold mine for you, Dr. Barrett.
Well, he's a great guy, and, you know, I love him.
He sure is. I voted for him when I lived in Minnesota, and I just moved over here 2 years ago, and, I mean, it was the biggest thing in Minnesota. I mean, it was such an upset, and I think you can pull this off, and with his support, boy, that's just a strike of gold for you. So we wish you the best, and good luck.
Thank you, Martha. Appreciate it. Take care. All right. Next caller, before we get to Sophia, and we do have Sophia waiting, next caller is Russ from Iowa. So this will be the last caller we take before Sophia. What's up, Russ?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty good. I enjoyed talking to Jesse and Martha and now you. So what's on your mind?
I was just curious if you'd heard any about the newest research on 9/11, some of it coming out of the Dr. Judy Wood camp about the Hurricane Erin.
No, yeah, I saw something about that, and it's interesting and worthy of further research that there was this Hurricane Erin bearing down on New York City on 9/11, and it never got there, and then we kind of forgot all about it. That's definitely interesting.
I guess I'm curious if you've had very much opportunity to look at her work.
You know, I really haven't that much. I looked at her webpage, you know, a year or so ago was probably the last time I took a good look at it, and I always thought that it was a really valuable resource with a great collection of photos and some really interesting questions. I don't jump from those questions that she's asking and those photos that she was presenting to the conclusion that she does, which is this very strongly held conclusion that some kind of directed energy weapons were used on the Trade Center. I don't see a way to make that leap personally. But I have to admit that she's put up good photos, asked some good questions, said, hey, this would be a good time to bring on Sophia, because Sophia is always interested in any kind of exotic speculation, especially, things involving, weather weapons, controlling hurricanes and so on. So, hey, Sophia, what's up?
What's up? The sky that they're transforming into a plasma, which is electromagnetic, electromagnetic conversion. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Yeah, welcome, by the way. Sophia Smallstorm, director of 9/11 Mysteries. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back, Kevin.
Yeah, so I'm happy to have you, too, especially because we have Russ in Iowa asking a question that I'm really not able to answer.
Well, you know, I don't know exactly how Hurricane Erin configured into the 9/11 picture myself, but I would love to know. I'd love to know more about it. I'd love to interview Judy Wood and have her explain what this all means. I can't seem to find anybody who can spell it out for me, so it's not that I'm playing dumb. I'm actually very interested. Rusty, you know what it means.
Well, I guess if you've read her work and her study, basically what the thinking is related to Erin is that there are field effects that go along with the hurricane, which essentially create the atmosphere that's necessary for certain types of directed energy weapons to work. Basically, it's creating a medium in which you can run other electromagnetic energy through, which will cause major effects.
Do you have a source where people could go and learn more about this?
Well, I guess I would say go right to the source, which is Dr. Wood's website, drjudywood.com.
Okay, yeah, I think I did look briefly at her hurricanes up there, and actually, like Sophia, I was left with more questions than I came in with. I really didn't understand quite what she was talking about. But listen, Russ, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but
okay.
Sophia, we only have a few more minutes with Sophia, and she wants to give us a state of the 9/11 Truth Movement synopsis. Is that okay? Can you check back maybe in the next hour? Hello, Russ?
Russ is gone.
Okay, looks like Russ dropped off. Sophia... what's your sense of the state of the 9/11 Truth Movement right now as we're coming up on this anniversary?
Well, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of this fragmentation and a lot of division and a lot of name-calling, and I don't know if that's just the way human nature is or that's how we've been worked to become not supportive of each other. But I wrote a little piece today, and I guess it'll make its way somehow to the Internet. But, you know, from the beginning, Kevin, when we were doing our live show, 9/11 Mysteries, Brad and I, in Hollywood at the Met Theater. Now, don't picture anything fancy. The Met Theater is very well regarded, but it's in a rundown section of Hollywood. It's not like we were being wined and dined by Brad Pitt and the big producers. But we were already back then called COINTELPRO because people in the 9/11 movement who had big websites, some of them, had heard of our little show, and they decided because it was in Hollywood, we had to have certain connections and we had to be part of the group that manipulates the world.
So this is the paranoid schizophrenic contingent in the 9/11 Truth Movement, in other words.
Yes. Nobody bothered to attend the show or ask someone who had. They just put this out on the Internet. Oh, this is, you know, from the other side. It's all false information. And then when I made the DVD and that was released, because it was like a big sensation in a day or so of its release, people began to say it was produced by the CIA, and others began to say later that there were faked explosions in the footage and the soundtrack. And then others, because I showcased the work of Eric Hufschmid, they began to accuse me of being on the wrong side because Eric Hofschmidt had gone off in other directions that they didn't approve of. But
well, I don't approve of those directions that he went off in, or at least one of them. But I also respect his work. He did a great book and a great DVD.
I said I showcased the work of Eric Hofschmidt. So what happened to research? Now, I think what's going on in the 9/11 movement is that he or she who shares facilities with peanuts and soy and dairy becomes an allergen, too.
Okay.
So you can't even associate, not even remotely, with the wrong crowd.
And I think it, for people who are wondering what's the context of all this, Sophia, you know, you've gotten some heat recently from, there was a guy at 9/11 blogger ranting about you, and then there have been some other folks. So you're concerned about this infighting?
Well, I'm just concerned that we can't. This is not a good face to present to the outside world. Nobody joins us.
That's right. If we look like we're paranoid, no one's accusing each other and quarreling, that is not a good face to present to the outside world. Well, I'm trying to present the face, and I'm having a pretty good time doing this. At least I'm doing my best to. You want to stay for a few moments into the next hour, Sophia,
yes,
as we bring on Peter Fathom?
Yes, yes.
Sounds good. We'll be back with Sophia Smallstorm of 9/11 Mysteries and Peter Fathom of LA 9/11 Truth. Talking right now with Sophia Smallstorm, the director of 9/11 Mysteries, and we've also brought on Peter Fathom of LA 9/11 Truth. Sophia's talking about the state of the 9/11 Truth movement, which she thinks seems to have a little too much dissension and paranoia, and I'm sure Peter will have his opinions on that, too. Let's see, how should we start? Maybe let me introduce Peter, and then Sophia can pick up. You can pick up where you left off. So Peter Fathom has worked with the key groups in the Los Angeles area. He's been with WeAreChange.org. He's had an impeachment group, and he's with LA 9/11 Truth. He recently made a great YouTube, or was featured in a great YouTube, after he interrupted Nancy Pelosi's address at American Jewish University and was hauled off by security and spent the night in jail. Last Thursday, I think it was, Peter had all of his charges dropped. So, hey, welcome, Peter Fathom.
Hi, good afternoon, Kevin. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you. You know, we're chewing over the state of the 9/11 Truth Movement right now with Sophia. And, Sophia, you were just saying that you had this bad experience even right when you first got in the movement. You were doing your stage production from which 9/11 Mysteries emerged. And there were already crazy, paranoid people yelping and yapping about you being disinfo.
That's right. And being, you know, funded by the wrong people. And then when I made the movie, I was again funded by the wrong people. Like they know anything. They don't know where anything comes from, and they don't care. It's just a way to vent. I don't know what they're venting about, and to create a climate in which everybody is suspected of not being the real deal.
Well, that's right, and that's why it's so useful to actually meet people and get to know them in person if you can. And that's why these 9/11 conventions or get-togethers, gatherings are so important. And I've been to a number of those, and just about all the people I've met at those events, such as the Chicago Conference in 2005 and the Phoenix Conference and the Vancouver Conference and so on, you know, all the people I meet at these conferences, with a very few exceptions, I really end up getting along with very well. And then also, you know, people flame each other over emails way too easily, but if you pick up the phone and talk to the person, you can have a kind of interaction where you can sort out your problems pretty quickly. And I found everybody who's willing to talk on the phone with me can sort out their problems very, very quickly. I don't have a problem with any of those people, including just about all the well-known names in the 9/11 Truth Movement. The people that I want to watch out for are the ones who run around under assumed names, and they won't talk things out. They won't call you. You know, you give them your phone number, and they still won't call you. All they'll do is hide in their parents' basement or their bunker or wherever they are and snipe at you. I agree that, you know, it's really important to try to improve the personal relationships within the 9/11 Truth Movement. And, you know, I hope we'll be seeing some progress on that front at some point. Well, what do you think, Peter? What's your take on this?
Well, yeah, I think like anyone who has been in the movement for a lengthy period, with the possible exception of David Ray Griffin, you know, I've had my own run-ins with people as of late. I think I was immune from that until recently when I started to go beyond 9/11 and really delve into some deeper issues. In particular, Kevin, I was asked to leave We Are a Change LA by the steering committee there because, I was, I think, going beyond 9/11 in and of itself and just the controlled demolition, deep power analysis of the day, on the day of, and starting to look at broader questions of international finance and historic, roots to a lot of the institutions that we talk about loosely, Skull and Bones, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs, etc.
Wait, I thought We Are Change actually encouraged that sort of thing.
I think there's a level. We Are Change New York may be very different from We Are Change LA in that respect. The Los Angeles group. And again, there's the Los Angeles group is a terrific group. They've done some extraordinary things, some fantastic street activism. I just think that, 9/11 Truth LA has really, in the last year especially, shifted from just a focus on 9/11 to a primary focus on the questions surrounding why and how and, not how, questions surrounding why and who and
right. Well, these are the kind of differences that it seems to me really shouldn't be important enough for us to waste a lot of time and emotional energy over. And I would say that's true for about 99% of the things that people are always fighting about.
A lot of it is just plain ego, And if you, just to cut to the chase, I think people take ownership of the movement, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But I think part of the problem is we're in something at a grassroots level that's very organic that is not any single individual or anything. And I think a lot of people get protective of what they've done and their analyses it's all too easy to blame other people or to hold against them deviations from one's own particular take on events or one sense of priorities with respect to analysis. And I think there's also, and I don't want to exaggerate this, but I do think there are generational issues and different frameworks, analytical frameworks and points of view and references which people are different from each other.
Right. Well, that's the strength of the 9/11 Truth Movement, in my opinion, is that it brings a very broad spectrum of people together in pursuit of the kind of goal that no sane person can disagree with once they figure out, in the most broad terms, what actually was going on there. And it helps us, I think, it can help us drop a lot of our preconceptions. The great preconception that our government wouldn't do something like this, that we thought we knew that it was actually 19 Arabs led by a guy in a cave. You drop those kinds of ideas, these preconceived ideas that you already had, and suddenly they turn out not to be true. Well, maybe you can drop other ones, too, and think more freely and get to appreciate people who are very, very different from yourself. And it sometimes works that way and sometimes doesn't.
Yeah, I think that a healthy appreciation for different perspectives is valuable and is one of the strengths of the movement, no doubt about it. To some extent, this is all natural growing pain stuff. The bad part is when it gets personal and is completely unjustified name-calling, which has happened, to almost the vast majority of the names. On 9/11 Blogger, you can see it, and on other websites. It's too easy for people to become anonymous posters, to create a name out of thin air and ID, and then just tear down good people who are doing good work or creating innuendos, and I think it slows down the progress of the movement.
Oh, I have to agree with that, and we'll be back. Sophia, can you stick around for a little longer?
I'll try, yes.
Okay. We'll be back with Sophia, Small Storm of 9/11 Mysteries, and Peter Fottom of LA911Truth.org in just a moment. I'm Kevin Barrett, and I'm talking today. Well, I already talked with Jesse Ventura, and that was fun. Boy, what a guy. And today, since then, we've been with Sophia of 9/11 Mysteries and Peter Fottom of LA911Truth.org. We're talking about the state of the 9/11 Truth Movement here just before the 7th anniversary of the attacks. And, Peter, I think your diagnosis of things is pretty accurate. Yours too, Sophia. What's our best bet for getting past these problems? Should we really focus on having another big 9/11 truth gathering where kind of everybody shows up and gets to meet each other in person, sort of like Gabriel Day? I was talking with Gabriel earlier today. He's a great 9/11 truth activist, one of our very, very best, and kind of operates behind the scenes sometimes, but don't let that fool you. He's the one making some of this happen. And he said that he was hoping to put together by far the biggest conference yet. And, you know, it's not a bad idea because, as I said, the folks that you actually meet at the conferences normally end up getting along with you, and it's the ones that you never meet and that won't talk to you on the phone and that operate under pseudonyms that seem to be the problem.
Well, will those people come to the conference? That's the question. You know, I think there are definitely people inserted into the group, the movement, who are there exactly and precisely to cause disturbance. And we don't really know who those people are, but disturbance is caused in very typical ways, you know, ways that date back to what happened to other movements. In fact, I've renamed 9/11 Blogger. I've now decided they should be called 9/11 Flogger.
Right, right. Flogging the heretics on behalf of the one and only true truth.
Yeah. You know, and as I say always, truth is not one small thing. Truth is an expanding understanding of many things. And if you start dissecting the bigger picture and removing parts of the discussion because they're off limits, because they offend this person or that person, you can't really find any, you can't make the fabric, you know?
Well, I think that's a good point, Sophia, but there is a point on the other side, which is that unchecked, letting chat rooms just go totally unchecked and unregulated often leads to a tremendous amount of squabbling. And Janice Matthews of 911truth.org, who is another of my favorite people in the 911 Truth Movement, made this point recently. I suggested, well, you know, maybe you guys should set up, a better version of Blogger. And she said, well, we don't want to have open chats because that's just people just fight all the time. They seem to always want to fight each other. And that's, you know, there's a point to having, you know, wanting to find a way to avoid the fights and the infighting and the name calling, but by banning people and limiting things too stringently, I think that, you know, 9/11 Blogger has erred in the other direction.
Well, again, I'm not talking about chat rooms. I'm talking about people publishing papers, offering formal views on things which are regarded by others to be not permissible. You know, that's not, to me, that doesn't make any sense. Everyone is here to put their own understanding together, and we all have expertise and viewpoints to exchange. And you don't have to exchange with people whose viewpoints you don't like, but I feel that it's wrong to put out a call to banish them altogether.
Right, and I also think that ad hominem attacks and guilt by association attacks should be off limits. That, you know, this whole notion that, you know, somebody associates with somebody who associates with somebody who associates with somebody, and that person associates with some terrible person, you know, a serial killer or something. Well, then the first person in the chain is guilty of something. This is such utter nonsense. And you know, I am a little peeved at 9/11 Blogger right now myself. You know, they have completely blacked me out. They won't cover any news involving me. When Jesse Ventura endorsed my campaign for Congress, which is pretty big news for anybody interested in the 9/11 Truth Movement, that's been blacked out. They recently blacked out the fact that Anthony Hall, a very prestigious Canadian professor who put out this stunning book called The American Empire in the Fourth World, Naomi Klein, the author of The Shock Doctrine, said about this book, "I cannot overstate the importance of this book. If used properly, it could change the world. So Anthony Hall is one of the most interesting and sought-after and influential professors out there. He just published an extensive paper on 9/11 truth, a hard-hitting pro 9/11 truth paper, and then he presented that with me at this wonderful event we just were in at Edmonton, and people can see that at edmonton911truth.com. But once again, this stunning news of Anthony Hall joining the 9/11 truth movement in a huge way has been blacked out at 9/11 Blogger for the sole reason that I was at the same conference where he read this paper. So it's guilt by association, because I do a radio show and Jim Fetzer comes on 2 days, 3 days, I come on too. That means I'm guilty of everything that Fetzer does, and Fetzer's guilty of everything that Morgan Reynolds does. So Anthony Hall, if he shows up with me to present his paper, he's guilty of everything that I do. And so he's a terrible guy, and we should forget the fact that this extremely influential professor has just come out with a really thick, brilliant 9/11 truth paper. But you'll never hear about that at 9/11 Blogger.
Yeah, that's because of what I said. He or she who shares facilities with peanuts and soy and dairy becomes an allergen, too. Don't you get it?
I guess, Peter, what do you think? Are we all turning into allergens?
Well, I think some of it is competition. I mean, I went through this a little bit with the impeachment movement at the very beginning, and I can tell you that, you know, you had a range of impeachment websites and entities, groups out there, and coordinating their different efforts and communicating. There were egos there, too, and posting on websites, you have to get someone's approval, and then to some extent you can detract from one website's go-to nature and brand equity if you build up your own. And I think, with impeachment, what was great about impeachment, Kevin, was that at the end of the day, the goal was pretty simple. The goal was impeaching Bush and Cheney and constitutional upholding and creating some sense of accountability in this country. With 9/11, though, it's much more complicated, and I think a lot of what's going on here has to do with the big picture and then the sensitivity of people, again, to wanting to make sure they're the one with the right message and they get recognized as such. I think it's a tough process. It's a harder process.
It's a learning process. We're all still learning, and we'll be back with more in just a second. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on every Monday and Friday while the evil heretic Jim Fetzer comes on to spread disinformation on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. All right, we're talking today with Peter Fathom of LA911Truth.org and Sophia Smallstorm of 9/11 Mysteries. And we're talking about the current state of the 9/11 Truth Movement. If you want to call in and express yourself, we are at 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9933.
Kevin, just quickly, it's 911truthla.com.
Okay. I got you wrong there. 911truthla.com.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes the dot-coms and the dot-org start to get to me. But, you know, in terms of the state of the 9/11 truth movement, we often think, you know, we get frustrated. We think, well, we haven't gotten there yet. Poor old David Griffin has, he has five unwritten, three-quarters finished books laying around that he's been putting aside and devoting all his energy to 9/11 truth. And we all have other things that we would like to be doing in a post-9/11 truth world. And yet it's a long, slow process, and people get frustrated, and sometimes they start searching for scapegoats and so on. But Bob Bowman told me recently, he's the former head of the space weapons program under Ford and Carter, and he's been a whistleblower on space weapons ever since.
He's speaking at our event this Thursday.
He is. He's speaking, with you in L.A. this Thursday. And Bob told me that he thought that the reason there hasn't been another 9/11 is precisely the work of the 9/11 truth movement. So, in that sense, we're winning.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a lot of truth to that. I mean, I can tell you that here in Los Angeles, we've become we are Change LA is out there, 9/11 Truth LA. And there are a number of other 9/11 truth groups in the five-county Los Angeles area. And I think, you know, we're expecting at least 400 plus people at this Thursday's event. And one of our action plans, you know, it's the title, subtitle of the conference is, the event is Beyond Left and Right, a Call to Action. And we're going to advocate very visible political lobbying and high visibility television actions in the months to come, including the Pasadena Rose Parade this coming January. And I think the part of what's going on here is that the traditional Democratic and Republican political establishments are recognizing, you saw at the convention, for example, the visibility of some of the protesters there on 9/11. At a certain point, there's that 100th monkey moment where 9/11 truth and the movement simply can't be ignored and just sort of set aside, where there are enough people out there organically participating at the grassroots level that the establishment politicians and the media simply can't ignore what's going on. And I think we're reaching that point. I really do think that around the world, awareness of the movement has grown dramatically in the last several years. A lot of big names have come on board, and I think a certain amount of credibility in the mainstream media has been brought by people like Gore Vidal, Jesse Ventura, Cindy Sheehan, Dennis Kucinich, you know, embracing it to various degrees 9/11 truth. And I think, you know, we're hoping we can leverage that and build on it in the year to come.
Indeed. And it's fascinating that Russian state TV will be playing Zero, the 9/11 truth documentary featuring Gore Vidal and others on the anniversary. Well, that's going to be seen by a lot of folks in Russia. And I wonder if that isn't sort of a shot across the bow, that the Russians presumably would have some satellite surveillance evidence and other intelligence evidence concerning what might have actually happened on 9/11. And I wonder to what extent they and perhaps other governments are in a position to blackmail the U.S. government by threatening to push the truth out there.
It's quite possible. I think I don't remember his name, but there was a Russian intelligence minister who came out.
Oh yeah, that was that general, and his Ivanov, I think, or something like that. Yeah, I know who you mean.
Yeah, just like Andreas von Bülow, the German defense minister,
right?
And Kosygin in Italy, and then Fujita in Japan. You've got some very high level sitting elected officials who are embracing the movement. If we in California, in Los Angeles, we're hoping we can get someone like Karen Johnson from Arizona to actually speak truth to power and go in front of a city council or the state assembly and say, listen, you know, here's the evidence. I'm going to give you each a copy of this collective works of, you know, Griffin, Tarpley, et cetera, Mike Rupert, and some of the documentaries, and I insist you watch it. I think that if we really put our mind to it, in New York and California, that we can find someone like that, a sitting elected official, who will be willing to take that step and go the extra mile.
Well, if I somehow win my campaign for Congress, you'll have a sitting elected official right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, which is why, you know, frankly, the Truth Movement isn't doing nearly enough to support people like yourself, like Cindy Sheehan, like Cynthia McKinney. I mean, a lot of words are tossed around, postings online, and the like. But at the end of the day, I know, having run for political office myself, that you need people to contribute hard dollars and cash and to become active volunteers in these campaigns. You know, the movement desperately needs people like yourself and like Cynthia. And I'm a Democrat now. I was a former Green. But I'm going to vote for Cynthia McKinney without a doubt this coming election, simply because of 9/11 and because she has so unambiguously embraced the issue and made it a central part of her platform. And everyone around the country who's listening to your program should take, you know, 2 hours out of their week and do what they can to volunteer with 9/11 Truth candidates' campaigns. And if not contribute financially, help with phone banking, help with letter writing, help with you know, generating publicity for the campaign. It's really that important. And you know, we're running out of time. I personally think that the economic situation is going to force the hand of the people who orchestrated 9/11 to trigger another false flag operation so that they can declare a state of emergency in this country.
But it's not just about false flag operations. I mean, this is why I've created the section on my website called About the Sky. They're changing everything on the Earth. They're making it all technologically altered, controlled, and while we're sitting around trying to wake elected officials up to 9/11, they are literally transfiguring everything that is alive through the genomes of living things. And that's what we have to also pay attention to. So this is why I've spent this kind of energy and time expanding my website. And believe you me, they're flogging me on 9/11 Flogger for that too. I have another tinfoil hat now.
Well, congratulations there, Sophia. You can wear it like a crown, because your film is definitely the queen of the 9/11 truth films. It's a really, really, really well done film. Of course, its name is 9/11 Mysteries for any listeners who are unfamiliar with it. But I think that 9/11 truth has the potential to wake people up in so many different ways to so many different issues, just because it's so big. It's so emotional. Once people break through that lie and see just how badly they were lied to there, then they will be freed psychically to entertain other possibilities, to doubt other official stories, and to start sorting through some of this stuff, start figuring out what really is going on in some of these areas. And I don't have that many preconceptions about what's going on. I don't know if you're right about the retooling of the atmosphere and so on, Sophia. But we certainly need to be looking into these things honestly in an atmosphere of transparency. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Sophia Smallstorm and Peter Sodom. Stick around. This is Kevin Barrett. It looks like Sophia has signed off. She had to go. We're still here with Peter Sodom. He's with Peter, give me your correct website one more time.
It's 911truthla.com.
Okay, 911truthla.com. We're talking about the state of the 9/11 truth movement coming up on the 7th anniversary. And I did actually just get an email from Anthony Hall, the professor of globalization studies in Canada, who just came out in a huge way for 9/11 truth with a terrific article, which people can read by going to my website, which is barrettforcongress.us. And then you can just put... after the backslash, just put Hall, H-A-L-L, dot H-T-M. BarrettForCongress.us, then slash Hall, H-A-L-L, dot H-T-M. You got to see this article. It's fantastic. So anyway, he just emailed me, and among other things, he won't mind if I quote him here. He said, those truthers are quite a tribe. Yes, for good company, they do beat the local bowling or curling scene. So that's a compliment from a brand new 9/11 truther who had a terrific time with us up in Edmonton this past weekend. You can hear about that at edmonton911truth.com. Peter, I guess we are quite a tribe. Of course, as you say, the powers that be do hold a lot of the trump cards here. It's kind of always an uphill David and Goliath struggle, and we're always worrying that we're racing against time. We've got to get this truth out before they do their next terrible thing. And yet Bob Bowman tells us the reason they haven't done their next terrible thing is because we're out there and spreading skepticism.
Well, I think that's true. I think we've been a check on some of their plans. But I also think their economic forces, you know, have been building, and that they've been laying an infrastructure in place, a legal and technological infrastructure that is now ready, and when I say now, I mean within the next year, to go fast forward on what I think is the inevitable global police state that they want. I really think that what you're seeing happen now in the capital markets with the Federal Reserve and with the Freddie Mac bailout yesterday is screams in importance the magnitude of what's going on here. You know, we should all recognize that the Fed stepping in like this before a bankruptcy and seizing control of two private companies essentially wiping out the common stock shareholders is unprecedented. Has something like this really hasn't happened, even with the RTC, since the Great Depression. And Alan Greenspan, for those who don't know, he was appointed last year to two companies, PIMCO, which is the largest bond investment firm in the country, with Bill Gross, and the Paulson Advisory Group, which is a relative of Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury. And he's advising them on their mortgage strategies, et cetera. And I think PIMCO took a large position in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac's mortgage securities last year at Greenspan's behest. And a lot of what's going on here, Kevin, is the New World Order managing the capital flows and the playout of this pop of the housing bubble, which is the biggest speculative bubble in the history of the world, bar none.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, what, people, there's no way to emphasize it enough. You know, there was a $12 trillion real estate bubble created between 2001 and 2006, almost entirely by Alan Greenspan and the FHA and all these mortgage banks and banks, commercial banks, that lent without regard for people's credit quality in order to create this artificial wealth effect to keep the economy afloat. And the $12 trillion set offset the $4 trillion wipeout in stock market capitalization that happened from 2000 to 2002 and bought some time for the New World Order types basically to go fast forward on their imperial jaunts in the Middle East and the rollout of the constitutional unwinding and police state infrastructure that is now in place, I would argue, to start the integration, North American Union, all this stuff, which has long been in the works in terms of the underlying plans. And in the movement, the 9/11 truth movement, and this goes back to my earlier comments and Sophia's comments, too, about looking at the big picture, I think it's critical. It's absolutely essential. You know, I really do think we are like American citizens in August of 2000, right, a year before September of 9/11. And if we knew for a fact that 9/11 was being planned and orchestrated and that all the elements were being laid in place by our political and financial elites to enable it and make it happen, if we knew something like that was in the pipeline a year from now, within the next year, because of the economy, just like the economy was melting down in 2000-2001, the same sort of stuff is happening now, and you're not seeing the politicians really talking about this. The Sarah Palin stuff and all this stuff is just another distraction coming on the back of many other distractions this year.
Peter, is this this government takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going to precipitate the flight from the dollar that everybody's been worrying about on the part of the Chinese and the other foreign holders of dollars and T-bills and so on that could really put a permanent pop to that bubble?
Here's the thing. To some extent, the bailout was done to help China and the sovereign wealth funds that have been buying our mortgages from our commercial banks, these securitization practices. But there is no question that if you're a non-U.S. investor or a European or East Asian investor, Japan, China, or Middle Eastern investor, you're looking at the U.S., you know for sure that the dollar has only one direction it can go, and that's down. That's the long term. Now, in the short term, the U.S. can do all sorts of stuff to prop up the dollar and to buy some time, which I'm sure the Chinese will insist on. But the end game has been mapped out here. The United States taxpayer, they're saying $25 billion, which is absolute BS. This bailout will cost the U.S. taxpayer, at a minimum, before it's said and done, $200 billion. It's quite possible, given the actual reduction in mortgage asset values that's unfolding, which is over $1 trillion, it's quite possible that, you know, mathematically, the way this should play out is that the U.S. taxpayer will have to foot the bill and pay $1 trillion of taxpayer dollars to basically bail out the investors who took a risky investment and bought these mortgage securities. And that's foreign investors and to some extent, U.S. investors. But the end of the day, what Henry Paulson did was make a decision to shift the risk from the investors who bought these securities. And we're talking about $5 trillion of mortgage securities, the biggest market in the world of securities. $5 trillion. He took the risk from the investors and shifted it to the U.S. taxpayer. So you can bet your bottom dollar that no matter what happens next year, taxes are going to go up. I don't care whether it's Obama or McCain. Right? There's no way taxes are not going to go up at this point. Anything less than taxes going up means that the dollar is just going to crash because investors around the world are going to look at the United States, see that the jobs, the underlying manufacturing base of this country has been outsourced. All of this stuff has been shifted abroad, and that the U.S. government will be left with no alternative except to print money, which is essentially, Kevin, what we've been doing this year. We've been printing money, buying time.
That's right. Defacing the currency, that's the Fed's job. All right, well, thanks, Peter Thottam. It's not always good news that you bring, but true news is good news, because if you don't have the true news, you don't know what's going on, and you can't possibly deal with it. Well, thank you, Peter. It's always a pleasure, and folks can check that out at 911truthla.com. Take care, huh? Okay. .com. And finally, last but not least, don't forget, the only 9/11 Truth congressional candidate thus far endorsed by Governor Jesse Ventura on this very show, DareIt for Congress.us.